Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. It's simple, really. You either want to grow in virtue and holiness, or you want to be a sissy, whiny baby. If you choose to move forward, grab your whiskey glass, because the Catholic Man Show is starting right now.
And welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you.
I'm glad you joined me.
We might be on the Lord's team, but we're getting by the skin of our teeth.
Yes. Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. I'm really excited about this episode for several reasons.
It's a shocker.
I know. I think I say that every
really
time.
Really excited about the episode today.
Yes, I am very excited, though, because one, we're going to try a port as our drink.
Yeah.
Something we haven't had on the Catholic Man Show before. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You doing okay?
I'm just doing my own thing over here.
Okay. And then also, we're going to kind of piggyback off of some of the topic that we had with Brett McKay from The Art of Manliness, the special edition episode that we released a few days ago.
Yeah.
So on being a servant leader.
I'm really excited about it too, Adam.
So, and not only that, I'm wearing my Winged Hussar shirt.
I like it. It says Hussaria.
Can you give like just a brief, give a 1 minute pitch on what the Winged Hussars are?
The Winged Hussars were the most hardcore thing to ever come out of Poland. I am Polish myself. And most of my life, until I learned about the Winged Hussars, I thought, you know, we don't really have many victories other than like the spiritual ones that look like losses on the outside, you know?
Right.
Our victory column was filled with losses, which is like a Christian irony, but still wasn't all that glamorous. Until I learned about the Winged Hussars, turns out they're this cavalry unit. They came and won the Battle of Vienna for the West, for all of Christendom.
In 1750-ish?
In 15.
Oh, 15.
15. Late 50s, early 60s.
I was only like 200 years off.
I mean,
on the grand scheme of history, that's not that bad.
It's like a blink of an eye. So they came in, decimated the Muslim armies.
They were invading the Western, like...
They were, about to overtake Vienna. And as a result, we have the croissant.
And we were able to drink coffee.
Yeah, I mean, we could drink coffee anyway, but we certainly sat... The Christians celebrated with a lot of the Muslim coffee that...
That they found.
Was left behind, yeah.
So, today though, we are drinking, three things we do every episode. We open, review, and enjoy a man beverage, highlight a man gear, and have a manly discussion. All things promoting virtue, all things promoting moderation, and all virtues. Not
all
just,
things promoting Jesus.
Yes. And today, we are having, you want to go to the Bev Cam before I open
do.
This?
I do. I would love to do that.
Okay. Check us out on YouTube and Facebook Live. We're Facebook Living right now. Thank you to all 10 people that are 6 people
there
right
we
now.
Go.
There it is.
Buttons are hard.
Juan's not here, so we really miss Juan.
Yes, we do.
But today we are drinking a port wine. Dow's port wine is what we're having.
My neighbor's name is Dow.
Yes, he is. So this is, I'm really excited about it. We've never had port on the show before.
Yeah.
And
I like port.
Well... I think that I've had port. Now that I started thinking about it, like, I think we've had it at one of our Spirit and Smokes. Haven't we had port?
Yeah, yeah. Ken had some port one time.
Yeah. I knew that I had port
I need
before.
To call him back. He called me. Ken,
dude, this week has just been absolutely crazy. Here, I'll let you pour your...
good at doing stuff.
Dude, it has been such a crazy week. We had an awesome time in Pawhuska with Father Sean Donovan. We got a chance to go over there. See his beautiful church, his beautiful parish, and we
this
gave a talk.
19% alcohol.
Yeah, port is pretty stout, so you don't want to. You know, it's definitely a sipping. Let's cheers and then we can talk about it. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Iubensium Jesu.
So port, similar to how like champagne is, you know, champagne comes from France. Port comes from Portugal, from a
no kidding
port city from called Porto.
Wow.
And in order for it to be technically real port, it has to come from Porto.
How apropos.
Yeah, and so back in the 1700s, the English and French were at, they had a tiff going on.
A tiff?
Yes. And
When was it?
This early 1700s.
Okay.
And the French, that's where all the good wine came from at that point in time.
Was Portugal.
Was France.
Okay, France, yeah.
Yeah, and because the English and French were battling each other, the French cut off wine. And so the English were like, what are we going to do?
Take some of that, you Portugalians. No,
Portugal hadn't even come in yet. We're talking about the English.
Oh, sorry.
Pay attention. Keep up.
I was too bit. Okay, sorry. I bring other things to the podcast.
So the English had to go to Portugal to get wine. And what ended up coming was port. And port is a mixture, I guess, of wine and Burgundy, my understanding.
Okay.
It's typically a more sugary because and that's why it's more alcoholic, because there's more sugar in it.
Okay.
And it's typically a dessert or after dinner drink.
It is delicious.
It goes well with cigars. It goes well also with cheese. I don't know if you knew that or not. A specific kind of cheese. I can't remember what kind, because it was one that I'd never heard of before.
Cheese is a deep world. It's its own world. It's not as popular as some other worlds.
Like whiskey?
I mean, yeah. Beer, whiskey. I mean, everybody cigars. Likes cheese. You know what I'm saying? But not everybody is a part of the cheese world.
Right.
If I may.
Right.
So, meanwhile, the English are like, you silly French people. We have better wine than your French grapes.
Yeah, and so they started, and they actually got it cheaper than what they were getting the wine from France.
Nice.
So anyway, that's how kind of my understanding of
there's always a good story behind a good drink.
That's why I like scotch so much. That's why I like bourbon so much. That's why I like craft beer so much, is because that's why I like sour beers so much. And I don't even like sour. Like, I don't like to drink a lot of sour beer, but that's why I like it, because there's this great story. There's this craftsmanship that goes behind these kind of drinks.
Yeah.
So this one, let's see. It says there's some fruit flavors with hints of nuts and spice. It can be enjoyed anytime.
Yeah.
Paired wonderfully with cheese, nuts, and desserts. Deliciously chilled in warm weather, or you can not chill it as well. So, like you said, it's 19% alcohol. So it's you know, something you drink very moderately. You know, little sips. But I think of port. You know, it's starting to become fall. You know, it's like fall is here. The weather is getting cooler. You know, that means it's more scotch. You know, scotch has become more appealing to me. Ports, for whatever reason, stouts, you know, become more appealing to me.
Yeah.
And that's why when I was trying to figure out what we were going to have for a drink today, I thought it'd be cool to have a port. We haven't had one on the show.
I get a lot of cinnamon in here. Are you picking up on any cinnamon? Tell me what you think. It's kind of in the also Christmassy. You know, when you say the spices, there's some Christmassy spices.
There is
in
at the
there.
End.
Yeah.
At the end there has this little Krupnik.
Yeah.
Taste to it.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be the kind of the cinnamon.
And maybe I don't know. Krupnik has cloves in it. A lot of cloves.
I taste a little clove
there. There could be cloves in here. Or
hey, I got to give a shout out to Pablo Sanchez, because he is watching on Facebook Live and at. Where he's located, I'm not sure where he is, because I think he travels between Venezuela and Saudi Arabia, but it's 4:30 in the morning where he is.
Dang.
And he got up to watch us. So shout out to you, Pablo. Thanks for tuning in to the Catholic Man Show live.
He's probably fin to go get a workout in or something.
Yeah, well, I think that there's a lot of graces bestowed upon him for getting up this early and listening to us. For sure, it cuts off some purgatory time for him.
No doubt.
At least.
No doubt.
So anyway, we're really excited also this weekend. If you are in Tulsa, we have the 5K Rosary Run coming up to
benefit this Saturday.
The St. Michael Radio, the Catholic radio station that we run. And then we also have, we're emceeing the All Saints fundraiser on Saturday night. So that's exciting as well.
A night for All Saints?
I'm not sure, but bike ride at 5 a.m. Nice, Pablo. But yeah, so we have a busy weekend this weekend. And Friday, I'm talking at the Diaconate program. So,
I don't know what you want me to say to you guys.
Yeah, I know. That's how I feel. I was like, well, I figured I would. Here's how I would start it, dude. I figured, like, I want to thank you guys for allowing me to come talk, especially to all you guys who I look up to as fathers and husbands and Catholic men of our diocese. I have no idea what I'm going to say that you guys don't already know.
Mm-hmm. I've always felt this way. You know, every year the Pope asks a priest or a cardinal or to give a retreat to them. Right. I've always wondered what that's like for the guy who gets asked, you know?
Right. Margo, I'm not becoming a deacon. No, I'm just going to talk to the deacons. I'm really talking to them to ask for advice on a project that I'm working on, but I'm not becoming a deacon.
So anyway, this port is delicious.
Yeah. So,
it's,
port, is it different than the other ports that you've had?
I've only had a couple ports. I just remember, I'm going to say, no, it's not much different in as much as I can remember. What I remember about them is that they're just very delicious.
They are a little sweet. You know, ports are sweeter, so I wouldn't want to drink a lot of them. Obviously, well, with it being 19% alcohol, you don't want to drink a lot of it anyway.
But, right.
When we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're drinking a lovely port today. Came from the liquor store. Dow's Fine Tawny Porto. It's kind of a funny name.
It's a type.
Tawny?
Yeah.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm. Apparently there's a lot of types.
Well, I like it. One thing I do know about port is that it goes very well after a steak. Which,
yes,
you can tell.
I think
when
even
you drink
G.K.
it.
Chesterton agreed with you there, didn't he?
He and I have agreed on so much, it's hard to keep track of all right. The stuff, but you know, but I'm sure yes, he did.
It's safe to say yes.
Yeah, it's a safe bet.
Okay.
That he did. But when you drink it, you can kind of tell. Yes, red meat belongs with this. Not necessarily at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Have a red wine, finish it with a port. Do they make white port?
I don't think so.
It's always red?
Well, now that you say that, I don't actually.
Don't
I'm
know.
Not.
Don't know.
Let us know.
Everyone that I've seen has been red, which is maybe 5.
Okay.
So there's something. man gear for today?
Yes, the tire iron.
And if you're in Oklahoma, it's tar iron.
Tire iron.
Tar iron.
Yeah.
Go get your tire iron and we'll fix that right up.
Yeah. Not every man gear can be glamorous.
No, many of them are not.
But all of them are needed in some fashion.
I mean, the man gear, the sum of the man gear really represent the sum of the of men. You know, I think that, you know, we talked about this with the shop rag.
Boy, that was a minute ago.
Right. But, you know, that the shop rag is not all men, but it's the guy who gets in there and gets dirty
mm-hmm.
in order to get the job done.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's those guys.
Yeah.
It's not all the guys. And the tire iron is also, you know, not every man, but every man needs a tire iron.
Yeah. I thought we had already done this, but apparently we have not.
No, we have not.
So
what is a tire iron?
So it is to help change a tire.
Yes.
If you have a flat tire.
Yes.
And it's to help undo the lug nuts.
Correct.
So I think it's important. Changing a tire is one of those things that you just kind of naturally assume I know how to do. If you've never done one before, then when the time comes where you're, where you have a flat tire, you, it, have you, an Office reference, like, have you ever seen, you remember the Office episode where they had a flat tire and Michael was trying to act like that he knew what he was doing, changing a tire?
Yes.
And they had ended up, he had to go and like wave people down because he had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how I feel like changing tires are. If you don't actually have somebody there with you that knows how to do it, or you haven't practiced and understand how, here's what you're supposed to do. It's one of those things like we've talked about before on our show. Like, if you're not, if you don't prepare conversations ahead of time, when you get put in that situation, you don't know how to react.
Yeah.
Maybe this is kind of similar, right? If you don't understand how to change a tire ahead of time, when you get in that, put in that situation, you kind of have freeze, you don't know what to do, and you have to call AAA or...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to say, these days, people just change their tire by calling AAA. It's like, yeah, right. I know how to change a tire. It's 1-800, you know, the phone number for AAA.
Right.
Which is weak.
We're not sponsored by AAA, by the way.
It's weak that that's how you're changing your tire.
Yeah.
It's not hard. I'll tell you, you take the tire iron.
Mm-hmm.
You take the lug nuts off. The hardest thing about changing your tire
is sometimes getting the lug nuts off. Sometimes,
well, yeah, that, okay, that can be hard.
Sometimes they like air compress those lug nuts on there.
Well, also the thread on the tire, the thread it's works opposite. So that, as the tires spin, it tightens the lug nuts, instead of
loosening
them. Right. So
they're counter threaded.
Otherwise they would all fly off eventually. That would be bad. We all know that would be bad.
Jesus taking the wheel would not like that. Would be bad. Take the lug nuts
off. You pull the tire off. Mm-hmm. Put the spare on. Put the lug nuts back on. Now you put the lug nuts back on in a star pattern.
Yes, that's okay. That's a good thing to bring up.
So you always go across. You don't just like go around in a circle, because otherwise it gets too tight on one side and your tire won't be on flat. So you got to go like this on the,
like you make an A and like a whole star.
Yeah, just like you're doing a 5-point star,
right?
You know. And so then you tighten them all and you come back and you keep tightening them until you can't tighten them anymore. The hardest part about changing your tire is finding, is if you've never actually laid eyes on it, is your spare tire.
Knowing where it is.
Where is it in the car? Is it in the trunk, like under the floor?
Right.
Or do I have to go under the car?
Right.
And come upwards? Like in our new van, it's like in the wall, in the back, in the trunk.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Have you ever helped somebody else change a tire? Somebody that you don't know?
No. I don't think so.
Oh.
No, I don't think so.
I did one time, and I left my car jack with them because they didn't have a car jack, and I helped. Like, they were there. It was like a family. You could tell they needed help, and so I came and I stopped. Had time. I was gonna help. It was pouring down rain. I felt bad for them, so I pulled over and I was like, "Hey, you guys need to change your tire. Let's get this knocked out." And they're like, "Yeah, but we don't have a car jack." I'm like, okay.
This is just like the reading from today.
So like I, you know, jacked the car up. I helped them. Turns out they didn't have a spare that was like, their spare was flat as well.
Mm.
So we got everything out, put the spare on. I started like looking at it, pushing the tire, and realized, this isn't going to work. So we had to call the police, and the police came. And they were helping them. And I was like, okay, well, it's raining. I have to get back home. I'll see you guys later. And like, I didn't remember that I left my car jack with them.
It's a
until
bummer.
It was later. So that's not fun.
So there's a couple kinds of tire irons. You should have a tire iron in your car that is the right size for the lug nuts that you have. Okay. Because not all lug nuts are the same size. Okay, they're different sizes based on different wheels. So if you have a really big wheel, you might have bigger lug nuts. Also, there's different number of lug nuts. Mm-hmm. They used to make make wheels with only 4 lug nuts on them.
Really?
I don't know if they do that anymore. I don't think they do. But
well, it's 5 or 6.
Right. If you don't know, if you're going to go buy a tire iron, instead of getting one that kind of looks like a crowbar with a wrench, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. looks like a big, it's look, kind of looks like a crowbar, except it's a wrench. Get one that's like, looks like a plus sign. And it has all 4 sizes. I think there's generally 4 types, sizes of lug nuts. Mm-hmm. If you get that one, and then someday you get a new car, your tire iron is still going to work. And maybe your
Great
wife,
point.
Maybe you have an SUV and your wife drives a BMW, or, you know, wow. maybe you got her the nice car.
You're obviously doing well in life.
Maybe, or maybe not. I've seen some bad BMWs.
Oh, yeah, maybe so.
But, you know, anyway, the point is the the four-sized tire iron.
Right.
If you're going to buy one, that's the one I'd get. Because okay. cover your bases.
I agree. I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
I like that.
Also, I think the tire iron in many movies has served as a weapon. It can, and it very efficiently can be used as in a situation of self-defense. If it's handy. The thing is that they're usually not.
Right. What virtue do you think correlates with the tire iron?
Is preparedness a virtue?
That's what you're going to say.
Is it? You think preparedness is a virtue?
I don't know. I don't even know if you're saying that correctly.
Oh, I'm saying it correctly.
I don't know. I don't know.
What virtue do you think it is?
Being like...
The virtue of being prepared?
Yes, that one.
You mean preparedness. I'm pretty sure that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. I guess that would be the virtue that tied to it.
The virtue of forethought.
Forethought. The more we talk about virtues, you know, the more I start thinking like, well, is this a virtue?
Yeah.
Is this a virtue? Like... You know, the habit of doing the good, being a virtuous man, you know, okay, well, if there's a habit of doing good, and if you take any of those things to the extreme, they're no longer the virtue, they're a vice, you know, the right. virtue is the kind of the middle ground. If you take it to the extreme one way or the other, it turns into the vice.
Yeah.
So at what point, like, okay, so there's a lot of things that could be, I guess, technically a virtue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was thinking about this the other day. And my thought was that anything can be a virtue in as much as you are doing it to the right degree and in the right way.
There's a lot of caveats you put on that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of caveats in the moral life.
Yeah, that's the truth.
You know, and what's your intent? What's the situation?
Is it legal?
How much do you know?
Mm-hmm.
How many options do you have?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff.
How culpable are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Do they have the right to even know?
What's your frame of mind? All kinds of stuff. Well, the right to know, that
turns out like that.
Turns out maybe that doesn't matter.
I know that's crazy on the like the whole lying scale. Like, does somebody have the right to know something?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we talk to Carlo about
that? Yeah, yeah. Well, we because at the beginning. At the beginning of my stake,
mm-hmm.
And his,
mm-hmm.
I was like, no, Carlo, you're wrong.
Which is a bold move to take.
And then by the end of
bold
it,
position.
I was like, dang it.
I think he's right.
I think he's right.
we're going to try to get Carlo back on here pretty soon. So we're going to jump into the topic here in a minute. Hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
Winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Hanging out, drinking a little port with my buddy Dave. Jumping into the topic today, which is being a servant leader. We talk as men, we're supposed to be leaders in our families, supposed to be leaders in our community. But what is, you know, being a leader, but being a servant leader? Who's the ultimate leader? Jesus.
Jesus.
He has a lot to say about being a servant leader.
Yeah.
So imagine this. Picture yourself here.
Okay.
You are one of the 12. Which 12 would you want to be?
Peter.
Oh, that's a good one. I'd probably be John.
Bad choice.
He's the beloved.
Yeah, but Peter's in charge.
Okay. So you're one of the 12.
I'm Peter.
okay, you're Peter. I'm John.
Okay.
Andrew's hanging out with us. The three amigos.
I like that guy.
Yeah. And your brother? We are... This is going well. So, Jesus tells you that you have the authority to bind and loose sins. The authority he gives you.
Yep, I remember that part.
Okay, John 20:23.
Yeah.
What sins you bind on earth or bound in heaven, loose on earth, loose in heaven?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you not feel like after Jesus says that to you, you're thinking like...
Feel pretty important.
I am a pretty big deal.
Yep.
Like... This is what he's telling me to do, and I now have this authority.
Woo boy!
And
I'm already thinking about the sins I'm not forgiving.
and then what he says is what does he do right after that? Do you remember?
Yes. He says.
John's happened now. So really in Matthew, the Last Supper happens, right?
Yeah.
And what does he do? He washes their feet.
Totally.
You know, so like here's Jesus giving this crazy divine authority, who is divine.
Yeah.
And then right after that, he goes and washes their feet, which is such a humbling experience, right? I mean, That's why Peter like struck. That's why you.
I almost didn't let him do it.
Right, yeah, you didn't even want to. And then you said.
And then
well,
I was
then,
like, and then I, do yeah, every, I wanted a whole bath. I wanted a bath.
Right.
Look, I got freaked out.
Right.
When he's like, I
panicked.
I wouldn't get to go to heaven, and I didn't know what to do.
Right. So you panicked.
Right. I wanted a bath.
So, I think that it's important to remember that with more authority that we're given, more that we have is expected of us. So, and to imitate Christ. Who is the leader? He showed us that in order to be a good leader, you have to serve others, specifically serve ones that are lower than you.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. You know, I think that it's important to talk about, you know, we talk about being, you know, being the providers, the protectors, being establishers in our family life. And a lot of times you can start getting this high, almost not high, but like this excitement of like this power that you've been given and this important role that you've been given, you know, kind of like the apostles had to have thought, you know, about being able to forgive and sins and hold sins accountable, hold people accountable for what they've done. And then boom, right after that, you realize, oh, well, my job is to love my wife as Christ loved the church, and Christ died for his church, so I'm supposed to lay down my life for my wife just like Christ did for my church. And then, like, so it's kind of like more of a humbling moment as well. Thoughts?
Yes, I agree, and it is very humbling.
Okay.
But it's especially important for men. This is a good important for men.
Yeah, I think it, because I think that we fall into, I think naturally it's easy for us to fall into, like, the sins of pride and thinking that it's stuff that we've done and tried to accomplish instead of what Christ has done through us.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Christ, you know, I think that's why the timing of all of those events happened the way they did, to make sure that we realize where we're supposed to be.
And I think the role, you know, just this idea of serving others, it just seems to come so naturally to women, you know, just the way that they love.
Well, let's be honest. They receive, you know, like they're holier than us.
I definitely think they've got more potential.
I mean, because they just can receive, they're receivers. Yeah, so they receive this grace so much more. And we like push grace away at times.
Yeah.
Which is a bad move on our part.
Okay. So if grace is being broadcast out into the airwaves, they're like a satellite dish and we're like an antenna. That's what I think. They're receiving it and we're having to really work for it, I think.
Okay, so I want to talk about this list that I found. I'll link this into our show notes, but I want to talk about this list that I found of Dr. Robert Lewis, a guy named Dr. Robert Lewis, suggests 25 characteristics to be a servant leader.
Okay.
And I thought we could just like go through, talk about these. He gives 25. We probably won't be able to make it through all of them, but we'll try to tackle as many as we can.
Okay.
We have, you know,
minutes.
16 minutes.
Yeah, we have some time.
So the first one, a servant leader includes his wife in envisioning the future.
Yes.
Well, all these you're going to say yes to. You should say yes to.
I do.
So I need more comments than just yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course he does. I mean, that one's kind of obvious to me, I think. That, of course, you're going to include her. I mean, you're just trying to piss her off by not including her?
No, but I think that a lot of times we think that, okay, I have this a business plan that I'm going to be doing, and I'm going to take over this business, and this is going to, you know, I have these business goals of mine that I'm going to take over to help my family. But, you know, there's times like, should you be buying, like, is it the most prudent thing to buy this business or to change your jobs?
Sure. I mean, you could say that about any leader that doesn't listen to other people who's part of the organization, mm-hmm. is not going to be an effective leader.
The next one, accepts spiritual responsibility for his family.
Mm.
That one is going to be tough.
That's a good one. That's one I think that I don't think about all the time, or that I think a lot of people don't think about.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that like kind of scare me, I think I've said this on the show, I know before, but one of the things that like I dread is on my final judgment, God looking at me and saying like, look at all this time that I gave you, and look at all the times that you just wasted it doing nothing, mm-hmm. you know, just scrolling through social media or just, you know, not, you had all these opportunities to pray and you didn't take that opportunity. Like I gave you all these graces and you just didn't do anything with it. Now you like multiply that to like your family as well. Like look at all these opportunities that you had to teach your children about the faith, you know, to pray with your wife. And you just didn't take that as opportunities.
Yeah. Read it again. What it said.
It says accept spiritual responsibility for your family.
See, I think that's also, you know, in some way the buck stops here. You know, is it, and you know, the person in charge is in charge. So if one of the people under them does something wrong, mm-hmm. it's still the guy in charge. You know, it's like in the Navy, the captain of the ship is responsible for everything that happens on that ship. Mm-hmm. So if a guy in the engine room is doing something dumb and causes a fire, the captain is responsible for that fire. Mm-hmm. Even though he didn't cause it, it's not his fault.
Right.
But he is responsible for it. Mm-hmm. And he is the one held accountable ultimately for everything that happens on that boat. And I think it's kind of the same thing with us fathers. You know, if our children are falling into sin, then ultimately in some way we will be held to account.
Right.
Maybe we will not be held liable, but we will be held to account because...
But a lot of that goes back to just teaching your children.
Well, that's the point, is that...
Forming the will.
We have been given authority over them, and we need to exercise the authority in this case and make sure that they are well-formed, because probably they're not if they're, you know, having mm-hmm. big mistakes. Mm-hmm. And if they are well-formed, then they need discipline or, you know...
Discipline.
Discipline.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But anyway, that's a... something to remember. And I think this comes back to Adam and Eve. You know, it was the sin of Adam.
Right.
That was the fall
That's
of
true.
Man.
Good point. Good point.
It wasn't the sin of Adam and Eve. It was Adam's sin.
Right.
Because he had authority and he did nothing with it.
We talk about this with Carla's episode. You can go back and listen to that. Okay, next one. Is willing to say I'm sorry and forgive me to his family.
Hard to do.
Okay, so we talk all the time how, like, you know, the sons of your family are going to know how to love the wife by how you love your wife. The daughters of your family are going to learn how to be loved by how you love your wife.
Yeah.
They're also going to learn how to forgive by how you forgive.
Mm-hmm. And how to ask for forgiveness.
By how you ask for forgiveness.
Yeah.
There has been a time where I had to go back to Luke and say, listen, Luke, my 5-year-old, like, I'm sorry, Dad was wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do.
Well, I mean,
it's hard to do because
it happens a lot as a parent where you come into the room, the kids are screaming at each other and you have to,
things are hot.
You have to break it up, you know, and
right.
say, stop, you know, and then you have to quickly, and usually you can tell who is pestering who.
Right.
But occasionally you get it wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you yell at one and you say, you know, don't do this, blah, 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 blah. And then you can kind of tell
you
by their...
discipline them.
Yes.
You don't necessarily yell, but...
Well, sometimes you do.
Well, yeah, but...
Yeah, whatever.
Right.
And then you can tell by the reaction, I didn't do it, you know, and...
Right.
You know, you can tell, that's a real... They mean that.
Right.
And so you say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have yelled at you.
Discusses household responsibilities with his wife and makes sure they are fairly distributed.
Distributed.
Distributed is what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is correct.
I forgive you.
Thank you. But that's something that I think that was the pre-Cana classes are really important, because it's like, well, who's going to take care of the finances? You know, that's something that a lot of times,
especially some of those jobs like that.
Yeah, some of those
jobs. Who's going to pay the bills?
Yeah, who's paying the bills? Who's doing, you know, some of those things are not talked about, and then you get married and all of a sudden, well, I thought you were going to do that. No, I thought you were going to do that. So
bad stuff happens.
We're going to continue this list when we get back. We're on the Lord's team. The
winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about being a servant leader. We're drinking some lovely port. Dow's port. It's a fine tawny porto. Whatever that means, it's what it is.
It's a type.
It's a type.
And where it's from.
It's good. I'll tell you what.
What and where.
Those are good things to know about a thing.
So we're going over this... Dr. Robert Lewis's suggestions for 25 characteristics of a servant leader. Let's get back into it real fast. Ready?
Take it away.
Seeks consolation from his wife on all major financial decisions.
Consolation.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'm sorry. Consultation. I'm sorry.
Consultation.
I said consolation.
I was like, consultation.
Sorry.
Like, I need to be consoled about those financial decisions.
I'm sorry.
Consultation.
I don't have my contacts in.
Ah.
So I'm.
You're the old man.
I'm the old man in the episode.
Yeah. Definitely have to do that. Especially on the big stuff. Yeah, I think you at least need to decide what's big stuff, what's not big stuff. You know, if you're about to spend $100, is that something that you need to talk about? Or, what's the limit? And that is going to be really dependent on your income. How much money do you make?
Mm-hmm.
If you make more money, then $100 is not a big deal, and just go ahead and spend it. Otherwise, you don't have to talk about everything. Like, hey, is it okay if I get the $9 sandwich?
Right.
You know, instead of the $5 wrap?
Prudence, exercising prudence here.
Yeah.
Is good.
But well, my point is, there is a threshold for you and for your budget, and she's not just going to go buy a couch
without talking to you. Right.
If she does, not cool.
Right. Follows through with commitments he made to his wife.
Totally. And with everybody.
Yeah. Anticipates different stages his children will pass through.
But the last one, commitments.
Uh-huh.
This is something that drives me crazy when people do not stay true to their word. You know, we used to, that used to be a thing that people were concerned about. It's like, well, I gave you my word.
I'm going to do it. Right.
And this is how I feel about people who are late. It's like, you told me you would be here at 5 and you were 10 minutes late. It's like, now I can't trust you. I understand that's hyperbolic and a little overboard, but be on time.
Frequently tells his wife what he likes about her.
Mm.
I think that's a really good one.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, the whole continually to date your wife.
Yeah.
You're making sure that you have those date nights, making sure you tell her that how beautiful she looks. You know, thank her for dinner. You know, thank her for things that she's been doing throughout the day, whatever that is.
I would like to take this moment to dedicate this episode to my wife. She is so beautiful, and there's so many things that I love about her.
Deals with distractions so he can talk to his wife and family.
Yep. Prioritize.
Mm-hmm. Prays with his wife on a regular basis.
Mandatory.
Yes, that is. Talk about something that's intimate. Praying with your wife on a regular basis.
Especially when you can move beyond the scripted prayers. Mm-hmm. You know, those are good things to do. You should pray the Our Father together as well. You know, right. You should pray the Rosary together. But once you can really start praying from the heart,
mm-hmm.
that's where the intimacy really starts to come.
And the beautiful, like when your wife prays specific things for you
mm-hmm.
that you were not even asking for or something. Like, there's been times where Haley's prayed for me like certain things that I'm like, wow, that was beautiful. Like,
yeah,
you're right. I do need that. I wasn't even aware I needed that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it gives a lot of good insight into the way they see you,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you hear the way that they
now,
pray
wives,
for you.
That does not mean you get to go around saying like, I pray that he stops doing this, you know,
like, dear Lord, give him the strength to stop scratching his butt at the dinner table.
Let's see, where am I? Takes time to give his children practical instructions about life. Tire iron. Changing a tire. Yeah,
totally.
How to teach the faith, establish traditions, and give practical advice.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a subtitle. Keeps his family financially sound and out of harmful debt. You can't go out and buy a boat if it's going to put you in a bunch of debt.
Yep. Yep.
No matter
But harmful debt.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's
important.
Some people are like, no debt ever. Debt is bad. And yeah, debt is bad if you can't pay for it.
Right. Make sure he and his wife have drawn up a will.
Yeah. That's, you know what? Practical advice.
Mm-hmm. Lets his wife and children into the interior of his life. That would be very hard, I think. For a woman, I think that's probably more of a natural thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know how to do that. Like, I don't even know how to give practical advice on how to do that.
Share your feelings with them.
Yeah, I guess.
When appropriate.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of what I'm thinking about. Like,
because, you know, you don't want to share all your fears with your children because you don't want to unfairly burden them
right
with worries
that, or scandalize them.
You know, it's like if you're worried, hey, I'm worried that, you know, we're not gonna have enough money this month, like,
yeah,
don't necessarily tell them that.
Right.
You know,
here's the next one. I really like this.
Okay,
honor your wife in public. We had a whole episode on this.
Booyah.
On making sure to honor your, never say anything bad about your wife.
Yes,
in public.
It's a good thing to bring up again. Yeah.
Yes.
Never, ever, ever. Like, don't do that whole, oh, you know, it's guys' time. We're all going to complain about our wives.
Mm-mm. No, you should always uphold, you know, and uplift your wife and treat her with the utmost dignity that mm-hmm. you can in public
mm-hmm.
and to anybody else. I mean, to anybody.
Yeah, I'm not, like, don't lie about, don't like make stuff up that's not true about her being awesome. But I would say err on that side of the whole spectrum if you're not sure where to be.
Explain sex to your children in a way that gives them a wholesome perspective.
Yeah.
That's something that I haven't had to do yet, but.
Me either.
It is approaching quicker than.
I think that's going to be hard.
It's got to be hard.
I think it's going to be hard.
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot of insights to do that.
I think I worry that a lot of parents don't worry about that anymore. I'm worried that they don't worry because, you know, they know, oh, well, they can just Google it. If they want to find out about that, they can Google it, you know, and that has got to be the worst way for your kids to learn.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. Encourage his wife to grow as an individual.
Yeah.
Takes the lead in establishing sound biblical family values.
Yeah.
Provides time for his wife to pursue her own personal interests.
Yeah. That one's important because just like us, you know, you want your wife to be a rounded human being, you know, to be beautiful in all facets and interests mm-hmm. and qualities and hobbies. And, you know, the more interesting things about her, the more beautiful she is. You know what I'm saying? So you want to give her time to
cultivate those.
Cultivate, yes, that's the word.
The last one he has is involved, a servant leader is involved in a small group of men dedicated to spiritual growth.
Mm-hmm.
which I thought was very apropos for especially the show.
Yeah.
Because that's what we try to help.
A small group.
Small group, yeah.
So like, oh, I go to men's club at church. That's not what we're talking about.
Right.
Because, you know, at men's club, you're not...
Unless the men's group is only a couple guys, but...
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, that's true, I guess. But it needs to be a small enough group to hold you accountable.
Right. Now, obviously, all of these things are geared towards being a servant leader as a man, as, you know, as a family man. This is kind of what he... What Dr. Lewis... I forget his first name. Robert. Dr. Robert Lewis, like, was writing about. This is always obviously geared towards men who are family men.
Yeah.
But I think we just have to remember that... regardless of where you are in your state of life, as Brett McKay said in our episode that we had before, it's all about this service attitude. It's all about I must decrease so he can increase.
Brett McKay said that?
No, I mean he was talking about just being a servant. You know, having a service attitude.
Who said that?
Well, John the Baptist said, "I must decrease so he can increase."
Yeah,
but I mean that's what I was using.
I'd like to award you 7 points.
Thank you.
It's a perfect number.
But 3 would have been the Trinitarian number. But anyway, so I just wanted to make sure that...
Do you want me to give you less points?
No.
I demote you 4 points.
To 3?
To 3.
But I just want to, like, I think it's very important to, you know, JFK even said, ask not what the country can do for you, but for what you can do to the country.
What a unknown notion these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like... this idea...
Everybody's a victim today. Drives me crazy.
Well, and the only way we can turn that around is by doing this in the family first. You know, giving that example to our wife, to our kids, giving that as an example to our church communities.
Yeah. Raise children who will know how to live sacrificial lives.
Right. Yes.
How do you do that? Live a sacrificial life.
Yeah, because you can't give what you don't have.
Yeah.
So you can't teach how to be a servant if you aren't service oriented.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
You agree?
I agree.
Good. I think the music is about to hit. We've been drinking a little bit of port. First time with port this evening.
It's been a lovely, delicious drink.
We talked about a tire iron. Anything else that you want to mention about being a servant leader?
You know, it's all by example.
And if our politicians remember that, our country will turn around. Well, it would help, for sure. It would not hinder.
I'm not going to get my hopes up.
Anyway, we wanted to thank you guys for tuning in to the Catholic Man Show. I'm Adam Minahan with David Niles. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.